Welcome to Wellbeing and You with the counselling team at Western Sydney University. I'm Erin.
And I'm Paula. We're passionate about supporting students to make the most of the university experience.
With this podcast, we're going to introduce you to a few members of our team and tell you about many of the great services and resources here to help you at university. Let's get started. So let's talk about stress today, Paula. This is the time of year to be talking about stress. We're recording this during StuVac, and so, you know, thousands of students are right on the precipice of having to jump into some exams tomorrow. I think this is one of the most stressful times of semester. What do you think?
I agree. I think stress has been part of most of my conversations with students. More recently, I've noticed it's a topic that's come up again and again. So I think it's great that we're doing this.
Yeah. I mean, we all talk about being stressed and feeling stress. But Paula, what actually is stress?
Stress is something that happens to us when we feel as though our own resources, whether it's internal or external resources, can't meet the demands of a particular situation. So we basically just feel, you know, pushed, perhaps depleted, perhaps unable to manage. So something occurs, in that sense. I guess it's a bit of an interpretation. So there are two main components. So there's a physical part, which is, you know, what our body experiences. And then, of course, there's a psychological component as well, which is where we evaluate the situation and make sense of it. And often, if we're feeling stressed about something, it's because it's really hard perhaps to make sense of it and perhaps to find solutions.
Yeah. I think that perception part is a really key, a key component to understanding stress, because you can have two people who are in the exact same situation, one who will fly through that, feel like they've got the resources, the confidence to be able to deal with that situation. For somebody else, they may not have that same sense of confidence, and they can feel that stress a lot more keenly.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what you've really kind of captured there, Erin, is the fact that it kind of involves continuous interactions with the environment and adjustments. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we might feel okay one moment and the next moment we don't feel so good. So it's this kind of fluid transaction, I think, that occurs between us and the environment around us. And that's different for everybody. Absolutely. Yeah. Very different.
Mm-hmm. The place where I see that most often is in public speaking, in that you can have a whole group of people all who have to give different presentations. You can see some people will give that presentation, you know, with no signs of stress whatsoever. They'll speak confidently, really eloquently, and then another person will get up to speak and those signs of stress will be really, really obvious.
Yes.
You know, that you might hear the tremor in the voice or see their hand shaking, and we might talk a little bit more about that, I think, later, what some of those what the experience of stress is actually like. But I think stress is really useful. Why do we even get it? Why do we experience stress?
So stress is, everything that we experience, every emotion that we experience, you know, always has a function.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, stress serves us with a function. And the function is that it helps us survive.
Right.
Problems that we face in the world, and it helps us survive as a species. Yeah, right. So it both kind of prepares us to act. So if you think about stress, it's a response. It's a kind of coordinated pattern. It's a change that's helpful and useful in situations where we're faced with possible, you know, damage or loss of resources or something like that. Or when we're faced with threat, you know, that's one example of where that might come into play. So there obviously is a defensive mechanism to it as well. So it helps protect us and our survival.
Right. So it's a protective thing. It's something that helps us survive dangerous situations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's not something we can get rid of. I guess that's sort of what I think of when I think of any form of emotion. You know, some emotions are much more unpleasant than others. But I think that whether we like it or not, we're kind of primed as human beings to experience these sorts of emotions. So it is about us, I think, acknowledging that. And, you know, we're an active agent in this process as well. So it's about kind of feeling empowered that we can manage our emotions differently. And that might change, you know, on moment-to-moment basis.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting to know that there is a bit of a relationship between stress and performance as well, and that the body's ability to have the stress response can actually be really helpful in performance. Without any stress, kind of you don't have that motivation to do the things that you need to do. Yeah. Too much stress and it can be completely paralyzing and overwhelming. And so I suppose it's about finding that balance, isn't it, where you've got enough stress that gives you the motivation, the boost that you need, but not so much stress that it becomes completely overwhelming and you can't do any of the things that you need to do.
That is a great point. So stress is useful, you know, when it allows us to function and to use that function. It's not so useful when, you know, it becomes chronic. We just sort of talked about this briefly before. Chronic stress is a big problem. It's a big health problem as well. Also when we're, you know, really dysregulated, or when we're dysregulated and distressed despite the actual, in the absence of threat, then that becomes a problem. We constantly feel stressed, and then it's difficult often to, you know, recalibrate ourselves and return to a state of optimal arousal, I guess, which is what you were talking about, Erin, that idea that we kind of have this window and then we might sort of jump out or drop out at given times, but it's difficult sometimes to return to a baseline.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's when it doesn't become so useful anymore.
Yeah. You know, that is something that I've absolutely had to learn for myself, in that I'm gonna tell you a secret, Paula, and that is
I won't share it with anyone.
We're not going to tell anyone else, but here's my secret. So one of my hobbies and one of the things that I love to do is dance, and I do a type of dance called physical culture. Mm-hmm. And as a part of that, we have individual competitions and dance and team competitions. And I came back to this sport probably about 10 years ago, and I noticed the first couple of times I went to compete, I was so nervous. So, you know, I was shaking. I was shaking so much that I couldn't perform to my best. I couldn't do a beautiful balance, or I couldn't concentrate on the moves that came next. And I think I've had to learn that actually that little boost of adrenaline that you get, kind of it helped me be a bit more flexible. I never realized I could touch my toes so well when you've got that extra boost of kind of adrenaline. And and I felt that I was able to complete all of the routines, that I had more energy to be able to do that. I was a little bendier. I had a little more stamina. And that was actually thanks to the extra adrenaline that my body was producing when I was in that stressed kind of state. So once I stopped fearing my body doing these things, and I embraced it for the benefits that it could bring me, you know, it didn't feel as scary kind of anymore. And I looked forward to being able to touch my toes kind of really well, or or stay in that balance a little bit longer.
So that's a really good example of how you've kind of adjusted, you know, your perception of what's helpful and what's not so helpful, and how it can really fuel you to do something that's much more effective. So I think that's a really important point, isn't it?
Yeah.
That sometimes, you know, we need to always check in with ourselves, and, you know, we can make these adjustments. And I think that's hopefully what students or staff, whoever's listening, whoever's out there, can get from this.
When you're going to sit an exam, are there things that stress response actually helps you with?
Yes, I would say so. So the stress, I guess what it would help you with, it's to kind of prepare. You think about how stress might prompt somebody to kind of act in a particular way. It can be really helpful because it will allow them to actually feel you know, capable and prepare in advance and cope ahead of time, so to speak. But we'll talk a bit more about that as a way of dealing with stress, the idea of coping ahead of time. But it can really fuel and motivate actions, motivate behaviors that can really help a student feel prepared. And you know, the part before the exam might be a very different experience to when you're actually in an exam. So you might, and a lot of students do this, they feel really prepared. Yeah. And then when they get into the exam conditions, it changes very dramatically. And that's because of what can happen when we kind of hit a point where stress is no longer useful. And I think it might be helpful to talk about what happens in the brain and also what might be happening in the body at that point, which can explain why it doesn't become useful.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to understand exactly what is going through your body when you're experiencing a stress response, because it can feel really scary if you've never had that intensity of a stress response before. You can wonder, what is going on with me? Why is this happening? For some of the things that I notice when I'm having a stress response is that my breathing rate will change. That tends to go up a little bit, and the heart rate changes. You get that feeling of the heart thumping in the chest. What else do I notice? I notice that I feel like the blood sort of drains out of my face a little bit. Sometimes I get a bit shaky, a bit trembly in a stress response. Can get that feeling of butterflies in the tummy.
Yes, I get nausea. I feel really settled in my tummy. Yeah.
I mean, there's been a bit of research into what is that feeling actually about. And some people say that that feeling of butterflies in the tummy is actually the blood supply being diverted away from digestion. So that, you know, and this is the amazing thing. All of these things are designed to help us survive a life or death kind of threat, that your heart rate goes up, so the blood starts to pump around your body so that you've got the energy to fight or to run away. Your body doesn't want to be concentrating on digesting food. If, you know, something is about to eat you, your body is like, no, all of our energy needs to go into survival. Into survival right now. And same, the trembling, you know, your liver releases a whole heap of glycogen into your bloodstream, again, so that you've got the energy to be able to fight or to run away. So it's phenomenal. I am absolutely astonished that our bodies have the ability to do this. And it is one of the reasons why the human race has been so successful. You know, if you think about our ancestors, the hunter-gatherers out on the plains, the ones who heard that rustling in the bush and were like, that might be danger, I've got to get myself out of here, those dudes survived. It's the ones who thought, oh, that's probably nothing to worry about, some birds, you know, that's I can keep going about what I'm doing. Those dudes got munched. They didn't survive. That's it. You know, so for anyone who is really struggling with a stress response and has a really strong stress response, I say good on you. You would have been a very excellent cave person. You absolutely would have had the skills and the abilities that you need to survive life or death situations.
Yes. You wouldn't have gotten munched at all.
No, absolutely not.
And I think that's a really, really good point, though, that sometimes, you know, I mean, the body does what it does regardless of whether the threat is real or perceived. I think that's why it feels so raw and intense. Yeah. In that it just has the one response. It doesn't necessarily have one for social anxiety versus, you know, saber-toothed tiger type situations. Which is why it's, you know, it's really helpful to talk about this, because we can really recognize it's something that we all have within ourselves, and therefore it's something we can all manage depending on our needs.
And I think understanding kind of the as you say, you know, we have our body's ability to do this even when we imagine the threat. We don't actually have to be in the situation where the threat is happening, but just thinking about it, our brain can be triggered to be like, oh, this can be a dangerous situation. Let's start the stress response. And the part of our brain that's responsible for that is the amygdala. And that's like the brain's threat center. I like to call it the smoke alarm, that it's kind of, it's the part of the brain that starts to sound the alarm that this might be a dangerous situation. Let's get all those physical processes happening. Let's get the heart rate going up. Let's start changing the breathing rate.
Yes.
And when that smoke alarm is going off, the other parts of your brain kind of, they don't have a job to do. Their job is just to stand by and let the amygdala kind of do its thing. And particularly in exams, that's where the real challenge comes in. If your amygdala is running the show, the part of your brain that you need to do really well in your exams is the prefrontal cortex. Mm. That's the part that's responsible for critical thinking, for rational decision making, for drawing on kind of learned information and being able to, you know, report that out as you would need to do in an exam. Mm. And when the amygdala is running the show, your prefrontal cortex is just kind of on standby and not able to do its thing. And so that's why people can sometimes experience memory blanks in exams. Mm. Or where, you know, when people are experiencing chronic stress over long periods of time, they can also feel like they're not remembering as many things as they would. They can feel very absent-minded and lose track very easily when they're feeling highly stressed.
Yeah, that's a really great analogy, the fire alarm, the smoke alarm. Yeah. And then it sort of just runs a show, that part of your brain, which is exactly why it's hard to function at times when we feel overly stressed and overwhelmed.
Yeah. And I suppose that's where, you know, a smoke detector is just a smoke detector. It tells you if there's the presence of smoke. It doesn't tell you if it's just toast burning in the oven or if your house is burning down. And it's that same kind of response that your body goes through, depending, you know, regardless of whether or not the house is really burning down or if it's a piece of toast. And so that's where the perception sort of stuff starts to come in, and how you need to be able to teach your brain to recognize when it's a piece of toast, you know, and when the house might be burning down. I guess the next question is, knowing that these is a really normal physical and psychological process that our brains go through to help keep us safe, to help us rise to the challenge, how do we keep ourselves in the green zone? What can we do to stop that stress response getting so strong that it becomes paralyzing and we can't rise to the challenge or do the things that we need to do?
I mean, I think of it there's two kind of parts to this. In that if we know that there is potential for us to feel stressed and overwhelmed, and if there's a likelihood that, you know, that might escalate at some point. And I'm thinking of exams here, you know, I mean, exams are stressful pretty much for everybody. I've never kind of met anybody that says, I love exams. Like, yeah, no. Have you, Erin?
No, that's a mythical unicorn. They don't exist.
Do you like that? I hadn't asked you that question. So if you know that this is likely to happen, then it's about coping ahead of time.
Yeah.
Right. It's about thinking, what can I do to prepare for that so that you have a bit of a plan in place for when this does happen? When you do, you know, go foggy in the brain, when, you know, the rational and the logic part of our brain gets switched off because we're completely out of our kind of window of tolerance, so to speak. And that's a term that is really useful to have a read about. If people don't know what that is. So it's a term that was coined by a neuropsychiatrist. It's called window of tolerance, but that's sort of really helpful to look at because that looks at the optimal arousal zone and what happens when we kind of jump out of that window, and then also what happens when we kind of fall flat or fall below that window.
Yeah.
But I think that if you are kind of at the space where you become really dysregulated at any point, then it's about thinking ahead of time what's going to be helpful.
Mm.
So there are skills and strategies that are going to be helpful at particular points. You know, if you think of a scale from 0 to 10, 10 being the worst stress you've ever felt, then there are going to be things that are going to be helpful then that may be very different to skills and strategies you might use when you're at a 4 or a 5.
Yeah.
So planning ahead of time, maybe talking to somebody about it, maybe just looking at what you've already done that's been helpful and pinpointing this is what might be helpful in that situation. I think, you know, if you're at that sort of point of feeling really highly distressed, then it's really important to involve your body as well as your mind in this process of kind of trying to address your needs. So deep breathing is a great one.
The slow breath and slowing down your breathing is so important. And the good thing is that that is so easy to do kind of anywhere, and nobody else can see that that's what you're doing, that you're just making that conscious effort to really slow down your breathing. You know, and it works because that's one of the first things that happens in your body when you are experiencing that stress response. Your breathing rate goes up, it gets quicker. So when you make that effort to slow it down, I tend to think of it as it's a little bit confusing for the amygdala. It's a little bit confusing for the smoke alarm. The smoke alarm is like, hang on, we're in a really stressful situation. There's fire here. Why are we breathing slowly? What's going on with this? And your amygdala needs your prefrontal cortex then to help you figure out, why are we breathing slowly when we're in a stressful situation? And it kind of, it engages your prefrontal cortex in the process so that you
It brings your brain back online, doesn't it?
It brings your brain.
What's going on here, guys? Can you step in, let me know what's going on? And at that point, you know, that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, really powerful to bring your brain back online. A handy little, have you heard of power posing before, Paula?
No, is that a physical culture thing or?
You know, it is something that I have integrated into my physical culture practice.
Okay.
There is a really interesting TED talk that's worth Googling by Amy Cuddy, and she researches stress. And one of the things she looked at is how the way we hold our body actually impacts the stress hormones that trigger the stress response. And she found that 2 minutes of standing like Wonder Woman, that pose kind of with your legs astride, hands on hips, spending 2 minutes of that helps you feel more confident. It lowers your levels of cortisol, which is one of the stress hormones that's really integral in your body having a stress response. And it also raises your level of testosterone. That just helps you feel a bit more powerful and a bit more confident. Wow. So, yes, I have integrated this, Paula, into my physical culture practice with my team before we're about to go out on the floor and perform. You will find me leading everyone in a bit of a Wonder Woman pose and 2 minutes of slow breathing kind of before we go.
Because
otherwise what we tended to do, you would find that there would be some members of the team who would start to wonder about, oh, what's the move and how does floor drill start and what do I need to do? And that kind of panic as people start questioning and doubting themselves, it turns up the stress response. So once we got into the habit of doing 2 minutes of that power pose and the slow breathing, just kind of brings those stress responses into a level kind of where it's more manageable. Yes. I think we see that before exams too. Do you notice when everybody is milling about together and there'll be one person who's really anxious and really stressed and it can start to be a little bit catching?
Yes.
Start to impact other people around?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're totally right. And and I think another great thing in that is that sort of that sense of, you know, encouraging yourself. Because often I think, you know, you forget, like you said, that example with your teammates, and you often forget that you have this and you can do it. You've done that before. Yeah. So you can do this again. You just have to regulate what's going on within you so that you have that space to focus on and you know, attend to what you need to. Reminding yourself of that can be really helpful. And that's the thinking part, I think, is just encouraging yourself, maybe using some positive affirmations, reassurance. For yourself. And sometimes we do this, we seek it from others. We kind of go, you know, tell me, have I got this? Is everything going to be okay? And so it's really important that as much as we do that for ourselves, and we can rely on ourselves for that as well.
Yeah,
Yeah.
So that would be one of my tips too. What can you do about stress? If you get really stressed around exams, avoid the hanging around with other people before the exams and avoid trying to catch stress from other people. Yeah. I think exercise. I'm always banging on about how useful exercise is.
Yeah.
I've had a bit of success, Paula, with students who experience a lot of exam anxiety and really high levels of stress around exams, of not studying on the morning before their exam, but going to the gym, going for a walk, kind of knowing that they've done all the preparation that they can do, you know, 20 minutes extra of cramming kind of before the exam isn't going to make it or break it, but working out, getting some exercise, those feel good neurotransmitters, using up some of those stress hormones.
Absolutely, for the challenge ahead. So important.
That can make a big difference to keeping that stress response within that window of tolerance.
Absolutely. Another thing that I suggest to students is to think about self-soothing and how that might be helpful. Because I think we often forget that we do particular things, and often, you know, as children, we were encouraged to do these things to kind of soothe ourselves and regulate our emotions and our behaviours. Sometimes we still carry them with us.
Yeah.
You know, sort of just thinking of, you know, the five senses and what we might find most soothing. For me, it's the sense of touch, you know, touching something that's soft and furry, like my pug. Perfect. You know, that's really, really regulating for me.
Yeah.
So really thinking of what do I need to, and what can I carry with me? So I obviously can't take my pug to an exam, but you might be able to take something else that's, you know, tactile, that helps you feel soothed, or, you know, having a particular scent on, or sight as well can be helpful. Maybe kind of having a picture with you that's inspiring. Some, you know, words as well. There's some really lovely, catchy kind of affirmations out there. And the other one I would suggest, which is a bit sort of different to that, is the power of kind of visualization and visualizing what it is you need. So one of my favorites is the band of white light, like a halo that kind of just, you know, travels down your body and creates whatever it is you need at that point, whether it's a sense of relaxation, whether it's draining of stress, whether it's, you know, just checking in and kind of just rejuvenating particular parts of your body. That can be really helpful as well, doing a bit of a body scan.
Especially if you're having a memory blank in the exam, to have something like that that you've practiced beforehand, that, you know, okay, if my mind goes blank during this exam, I'm going to stop, I'm going to slow down my breathing, I'm going to do that visualization of imagining the band of white light, you know. And then if you don't find that the information you need is coming to you at that point, you can stop, jot down a few notes of something that you do know that might be a bit of a memory trigger to draw you back to what you need to answer. Or I would say move on as well and go on to another part of the exam rather than staying on something.
It's all about finding ways to feel less stuck, I think. Anything you can find that helps you feel less stuck is going to ultimately help you feel less stressed in those exam conditions. You know, whether it be having a break, taking a breath, having a, you know, a sip of cold water, you know, that's really helpful as well, just stopping. Just sort of noticing and observing what's around you. Some grounding can be helpful as well. There are so many things you can do. It is about personalizing those things though. So finding what works for you is really important. And often I find a lot of students come in already using, you know, particular skills and strategies, but not necessarily noticing that that's really helpful for them, you know, or why it might be helpful, why that might be helpful compared to another skill that they've used at a particular point. But just clarifying that can be helpful. What is it? Why is this so helpful? Why is this working?
I think if students want to know more about this or learn, read more about some of these skills, I would definitely encourage them to go and check out Study Money and Life Skills. It's there in your list of use sites, and in there is a module specifically for exam stress. There is a module, a video on what to do if you experience a memory blank in your exam. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good place to go to get some more information. Paula, do you have anywhere that you point students to kind of where they can do a bit more reading or find out a bit more?
The TED Talks are great. Mm. I know that you're a fan of TED Talks as well.
Big fan.
So there are some particular TED Talks that are really helpful, and some of them are really short as well. So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to, commit too much of your time to it. You can listen to it on go as well, which is helpful.
Check out also the relaxation recordings. There are a couple there that are breathing techniques that you can be guided through. And once you know the technique, you can then use it anytime kind of on your own, because, of course, you can't whip out your phone and start listening to that in the middle of an exam. No, that's going to cause a whole heap of other problems that maybe we should talk about at another time.
Do what works. That's the ultimate thing, I would say. Find out what that is and do it. Yeah. I think that's one of the best ways you can manage your stress.
Yeah.
If it's, posing like Wonder Woman for 2 minutes before you go out on, which is fantastic. Yeah. If it's imagining, a band of white light traveling down your body, whatever it is that works for you, if you can find it and then you can use it, I think that's ultimately the best way you can prepare for anything, really.
Yeah. Agreed. Any other closing comments, Paula?
No, not at this point, Erin. Thank you. It's been really nice talking to you.
Yeah. Again. Yes. For exam stress. And I would just, I would wish all the students who are about to embark on their exams a manageable and, enjoyable and speedy process.
Yes.
This too will pass. The exams don't last forever.
Best of luck.